So today, by the mercy and potency of Guru Gauranga, we'll be dealing with misconceptions that may trouble us on our journey back home. Quite likely they will trouble us. And so we'll be dealing with a few prominent ones at this stage on the ISKCON scene. In essence, there are two ways that we can handle this. We could deal with it as an intellectual exercise. We identify misconceptions and we clarify things. Or we can deal with it as a transformational exercise. If we deal with it as a transformational exercise, then the first step will be, why am I troubled by misconceptions? How can I protect myself from potent misconceptions? And then when I have a bit of clarity in that field, I'll go on to look at some misconceptions and see what we can make of them. So I want to do it the transformational way, because having information doesn't solve your problems. Knowing how to apply the information solves your problems. So if you know why you suffer from misconceptions and you have an idea of how you can protect yourself from that, then you're not just dealing with one misconception and getting that straightened out, but you know how to deal with all of them. You've got a key that you can use for unlocking these things. Okay, so today I'm going to start with a story. Just a little story. There once was a man who lived and served in the world of computers for many, many years. He wasn't wealthy, and so he'd always opted for cheap computers. But that meant there were so many problems that disturbed his work. Finally, he decided he'd save the necessary capital and buy a Mac. Then all his problems would be solved. Life would be productive and peaceful. The big day came, and he purchased his Mac. But when he began using it, he realized the hard drive was defective. Whatever he did, whatever he tried, the computer continued to malfunction. He returned it to the company, but they refused to replace it or to give a refund. Instead, they gave him two pen drives, and they told him pen drive A should always stay in the computer. Without it, pen drive B won't function properly. So pen drive A has to stay in the computer. Pen drive B is also important. Probably they should always keep that in the computer as well. So if you follow our instructions, you'll have minimal problems with your defective computer. So this was the advice he was given, and he, being a simple man, followed their advice, and he lived happily ever after in the world of computers. Okay, so let's unpack this and look at what we're looking at. There was once a jiva who lived and served for a very long time in a world of dead matter, the material sky. He had passed through many species of life and found them all problematic. Finally, he received a human form and considered himself most fortunate. But he soon found that even the human form has defects. Life was still problematic, certainly not trouble-free. He complained to a trusted sadhu, but that sadhu didn't commiserate with him or even slightly sympathize with him. He just told him, "Yes, it's a bad bargain, but you have to learn how to make the best use of it. And for that, you need two master keys. Master key one, Sevan Mukha Hijivadam. Devotional service begins with the tongue, and be very careful what you do with the tongue. Master key two, take honest shelter of Guru, Shastra, and Sadhu with firm faith and affection. Just follow my advice and your problems in life will be minimal and your advancement will be safe, steady, and sure." Let's give it a try. So, quite a nasty mess. And the obvious next question is, is there any way I can cut through it? Sadhu from the unpacking we just read has given us two strong keys, master keys, two simple master keys, but master keys. And they, just these two keys, they can cut through all misconceptions. All misconceptions. So how is that? We're given power of attorney to the mind, and it has us riding on this pendulum non-stop. It's moving so fast that we don't get a chance to get off the pendulum. We're swinging on this pendulum, up, down, up, down. So Master Key 2, that was taking firm shot of Guru and Shastra, and Sadhu with faith and affection, that will empower us to say no to the mind. You want to close with that? That will empower us to say no to the mind. Because you're holding on to it, so even if the storm is there, you have the potency to just not float away with it. And Master Key A, the same Mukha Hijibado, that gives us the strength, clarity, and intelligence to use Master Key 2. If you just have Master Key 2, but you don't have any clarity about how to use it, you don't have the strength to use it, and what's the use of it? Okay, now, interesting point. Yes, we'll have a look at the first handout just to get things in a very clear perspective. Why am I troubled by misconceptions? My present reality. My present reality, my very existence is based on a misconception. And I'm living it. Firmly convinced that I'm dealing with real life. That I know what I'm doing, I'm in control of things. How can that be possible? We're living a misconception. The whole existence is resting on a misconception. So then we have a look at this whole structure that evolves from being absorbed in that misconception. And the unfortunate thing about this is that the end result of it is that I'm carrying a mountain of excess baggage. Mountain of excess baggage. Stuff I really don't need. And it's preventing me. That excess baggage is preventing me from seeing and dealing with real life on real terms. So the excess baggage includes my false ego, the contaminated consciousness born of that, my faulty intelligence, my troublesome mind and senses, the modes that govern me, the karmic reactions entangling me. The end is listless. Endless. Yes. Certainly not listless, it's very active. So this is what we're looking at. So it's good to understand why I'm troubled by misconceptions, have an understanding of why, but it's not enough to realize that we have misconceptions and to realize why we're troubled by them. We have to consciously start cleaning up the mess. Now, as soon as the rajasic mind hears this, so much action. I've got to start changing things. I've got to do this, I've got to do that. Make all these external changes. Tamasic mind just says, my God, what a mess. Too much for me. I'm not going to even look at it. Let's go back to sleep. Okay, but the rajasic mind, who can be quite a troublesome character, he has us all these plans from tomorrow. I'm going to do this. Yes? Okay. And that convinces us that we're making change. Because the rajasic mind is, controlling the show and saying, tomorrow you do this, you do that, everything's okay. No problem. This is not Krishna's program. Krishna's program is very, very different. His program for change is very, very different. He doesn't really give too much concern for the externals. He wants to know what's happening at heart level, what's happening with your consciousness. And his plan, don't worry about the externals, work inside out. Work inside out. One thing that we have to be very aware of is that in our present state, our present conditioned state, we can do nothing but desiring without being influenced by our karma, time factor, the modes. As soon as it goes into the mental box, all of these influences are there. Desiring, it's still floating. It's not going to be influenced. So if we direct that desiring appropriately, it's a good idea. So Krishna's plan is work inside out. What does that mean? You don't touch the externals yet. It'll be a big mess to try and work on them just now. First, let's get the mindset in proper shape. Let's get the, you know, things properly situated, and then let it work from that outwards. Worst thing we can possibly do is try and work outwards, inwards. It just doesn't work. It doesn't work. So what I'm going to do is give you a little exercise. It's a powerful little exercise. You'll be surprised how powerful it is. It's a second handout. Health meditations for dealing with excess baggage. So what this little exercise that I want to look at, it's called Helpful Meditations for Dealing with Excess Baggage. It's all from Saranagati. Now, we may not have a lot of time in a day, we may not have a lot of patience also. But I suggest that you try this little exercise. You'll find it very, very powerful. These are seeds. We're going to plant some seeds. And we're just going to water them by daily reading them. And the watering is going to be our japa. So what we'll be doing is, before we begin our japa for the day, we just tell Gurudev and Garanga and Nam that I really am tired of being an external devotee. I really want to give up this me and my business. I really want to get serious about surrendering to you. But I'm in a bit of a mess. I need help. But I want to show that I'm serious. So from today, I'm going to read through these meditations. And if I find that my mind goes wandering in the midst of my japa, I'll read them again. But then that's what I'm going to do. And then I'm going to shut my eyes. I can guarantee after 3-4 weeks, you'll see that your mindset's changing. Your value structure's changing. Everything is changing. Why? Because you've taken shoulder of Guru Naranga. You've said, you've made a step towards them. I'm going to do this to show I'm serious. You're calling on the holy name to activate it. Please activate my heart. Activate these seeds. Let them take birth. Let you be the one who waters does the watering process. It's such a simple thing. So the rajasic mind, when it gets some satisfaction out of big changes. I've really reformed myself. Look at all these externals. What's it got to do with reality? But Prabhupada's and Krishna's program is very different. Just work inside out and treat it as an evolutionary process. It's an evolution. It's not a big bang process. It's not instant. Right? So it's an evolutionary thing. When you do it this way, you'll find that there's no major upheavals in your life. There's no major disturbances in your life. Because you're taking shelter, you're following the acharyas by using Bhakti-vinoda-thakura's bhajans as your guide and as the seeds. And it's naturally unfolding in the heart. There's nothing artificial about what you're doing. There's nothing forced about what you're doing. Am I making sense too? Can I give it a try? It's actually very powerful. You can use different kinds of meditations, but because we're dealing in this field, I think, let's read through this just to catch the seeds that we'll be planting. Very powerful seeds. O merciful Lord, today I surrender at your lotus feet all that comes under the category of I and mine. O Lord, I no longer have any separate identity. Now I belong only to you. This embodied soul has given up the conception of I. The conception that I am your eternal servant is now deeply rooted in my heart. O Lord, please give me the strength so that I can always keep these misconceptions of I and mine far away from my mind. Today I take shelter at your lotus feet, which award fearlessness to all. I dedicate myself completely to you. May this mood of surrendering myself to you remain deeply rooted within my heart. Let it not be a temporary sentiment, like the elephant's desire to bathe. Everything is carried out by your sweet will, but we foolish living entities think we are doing everything. What can a living entity do if you do not inspire him? We can only desire, and it is only by your mercy that we can fulfill our desires. O Lord, I have given up the idea of depending on my own strength and endeavors. You see how he's challenging very fundamental disturbances, fundamental things in this. We are so dependent on our own strength and endeavor. He's really showing us, okay, just this prayer. Just make this prayer. Don't try and, do it out there. Don't try and do anything externally. Just every day, make this prayer. Take shelter. And let it unfold naturally in the heart. It's the constitutional position of the heart to think like this. It's just a matter of reawakening it, nourishing it, letting it actually come before bloom. At the moment, the heart is very choked. It's very tight. So we want to give it a chance to fully bloom. Oh Lord, I have given up the idea of depending on my own strength and endeavors. Now I still act, but I depend solely upon your will. You are my father, my mother, my lover, my son, my lord, my guru, my husband. In fact, you are everything to me. Whatever I possess, my body, house, servants, brothers, friends, wife, children, and household paraphernalia, all belong. To you now. I am your servant. I simply live in your house. You are the owner of my household and I am just your servant. From now on, all my endeavors will be directed towards giving you happiness. All my friends, my wife, my sons and daughters are your servants and maidservants. According to this understanding, I maintain my relationship with them. Because my wealth, followers, wife, and household articles all belong to you, I, as your servant, simply maintain them. I earn money so it can be used in your service. I spend it to maintain your household. In reality, everything belongs to you and nothing belongs to the living entity. Being bewildered by this misconception of I and mine, we are all suffering from lamentation and from fear. So give it a try, because it's such a subtle thing, but we're in a subtle realm. The contamination that we're dealing with is very subtle, and we're actually bewildered by it. So we can't come in with a sledgehammer. We may hit the wrong thing. We actually, if we just follow Krishna's program, it's very subtle, but very, very powerful. Very, very powerful. And the mind, if you can change the mind in a simple little way, everything else will spin off from that. Everything will spin off from that. Any questions on that?
Just a comment. So it's like, just reading it, it's very relieving, you know. I felt that when we were just reading now.
Okay.
I mean, it's like a, so much burden goes just by saying this to Krishna, that okay, you are the master.
Yeah, yeah. That's a fact. So can you imagine the potency of saying it every day? Mm. After having taken shelter and followed by your japa. How much more focus and how much more dynamic your japa is going to be. It has direction. It has direction. Okay. So now let's have a look at a few misconceptions. I've chosen some that I see here or experience quite regularly here in Vrindavan and elsewhere. We'll see how we go with this. First one. Rag Marg is based on Smarana, not Kirtan. I'm just reading some notes at the moment. Rag Marg is based on Smarana, not Kirtan. I want to practice Raga Nuga Bhakti now. And so chanting is not so important. It's a very common misconception, because of the very strong influence of the Babaji's in the movement at the moment. It's been there since the mid-90s. It's got nothing to do with the mood of Rupa Goswami as presented by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So let's have a look at what he has to say on page 552. I repeat the misconception. Rag Marg is based on Smaran, not Kirtan. I want to practice Raga Nuga Bhakti now, and so chanting is not so important. Okay, this is called eligibility through Harinam. Let's see. Srila Saraswati Thakur was concerned that indiscriminate dissemination of the spurious Siddha Pranali had resulted in immoral behavior camouflaged as spontaneous devotion, which had led to many persons being misguided and also to diminish public regard for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission. The proclivity for catapulting oneself onto the utmost echelon of spiritual attainment without sensible consideration of one's actual eligibility was a theme that Srila Saraswati Thakur found necessary to address repeatedly. For neophyte devotees were prone to be allured by persons who in all respects seemed like premi bhaktas and promised immediate entrance into the highest realms without having to undergo primary practices of purification. In accordance with the genuine pranali path of siddhas, perfect devotees, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's approach to Raga Nuga Bhakti stressed kirtan over artificial smaran, emphasizing that all other processes of bhakti, including smaran, could be properly executed only in conjunction with and by the mercy and strength derived from Nam Bhajan. That's a premise, a very strong premise, given by Jiva Goswami and Bhakti Sandhava. And Bhakti Siddhanta would quote off and comment on it. That chanting of the holy name was itself Siddha Pranali, and the Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had declared chanting of Harinam, particularly the Maha Mantra, to be the only Pranali for Kali Yuga, whereby all persons can attain Sarva Siddhi, complete perfection. Mahaprabhu said, I have told you the Maha Mantra, Chant it regularly according to the prescribed system, according to a vow, and with one pointed attention. By this you will attain all perfection. Simply chant always. There are no other rules for chanting. Just as those governing proper time and place are prescribed for other Vedic mantras, such as those governing proper time and place as are prescribed for other Vedic mantras. So he's always, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur very often would quote where we could find it from Chaitanya Charitamrita or from Chaitanya Bhagavat, specific things said by Mahaprabhu about the potency of Harinam. Srila Saraswati Thakur insisted that sadhana bhakti based on nam bhajan must precede admission to the rag path. He emphasized the need to become free from anattas and that the means to do so was the mercy of Srinam. This is such an important point to understand, such a crucial point, that before, just the fact that rag marg, you're not qualified for it until you come to nishta. This is the understanding of our acharyas. So what is the value of attempting to do anything with it before you've reached that stage? More appropriate that you, taking short of the mercy of the holy name and of Prabhupada's formula of Chittadhava and Amajana, we actually become qualified for practicing. This is actually a Bhaktisiddhanta quote. We have no duty other than taking the holy name. We cannot actually take the name as long as we have anattas. There is mostly nam aparad, and sometimes by chance, maybe nam abas. One must, from the beginning, endeavor to become free from anattas. By sincerely calling out to Bhagavan, the jiva may attain anatta and vritti. There is no other means. So he's making it very, very clear that, you know, these anattas are the thing that we should be dealing with right now. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Jiva Goswami, they both quote on the natural escalating course beginning with chanting the Lord's name, whereby realization of his root, guna, and eventually lila, would progressively manifest. This is quoted from Bhakti, the Sanskrit from Bhakti Sandhava. The practice of sadhana bhakti begins with hearing the holy name, which purifies the heart of the devotee. We have to know what we're dealing with. What is the actual process given by our acharyas, given by the Goswamis? It begins with hearing the holy name. It doesn't begin with chanting the holy name. You can be chanting the holy name and the mind can be everywhere. All you're doing is watering anattas. So it begins, the actual process of chanting begins with hearing when you chant. And that purifies the heart of the devotee. And thereby he becomes qualified to hear descriptions of the Lord's form, which then gradually awakens within the heart. Consequently, the qualities of the Lord progressively arise within the heart. As they manifest fully, the specific aspects of his service and pastimes gradually awaken. In this way, you see how it's so progressive? It's a natural unfolding. By hearing Nam, Krishna's form is revealed within the heart. We're qualified to hear about Krishna's form. From, you have a question?
No.
Okay. And then from that unfolding will come qualities. From that will come lila and seva. And you can't actually separate lila from seva if you're talking real. So you see how it's such a beautiful, natural, progressive way that things actually work naturally. As they manifest, following the specific aspects of his service and pastimes gradually awaken. In this way, the holy name reveals the Lord's form, qualities, and pastimes in all their splendor and beauty, and in all their different branches. So you see at the moment how everybody, not everybody, but many devotees, unfortunate souls, are running everywhere for this, that, some new idea. how to do this, how to do that, how to become advanced, how to become advanced. But it's just, why don't we just look at what the acharyas have to say? Why don't we just kick out that rajasic mind and do it the acharyas way? It's actually such a beautiful process. But it doesn't come cheap. The problem is it doesn't come cheap. Kali Yuga is an age of instant. If it's not instant, what's the value of it? I want it now. Right? It doesn't work like that. Any questions on that?
I've been told that when you're chanting, along with hearing,
okay,
you need to keep a picture of the deity you worship or to also intimidate. So how do you not feel like Thakur has...
A few of our acharyas have recommended that. There's no harm in that.
So, but that meaning when you're chanting, so if you have a form of the Lord in your mind, then does it... chanting seems to be more connected.
It's no harm in it. There's no harm in it. Some of our acharyas actually suggest it. But it's not a problem. But it may not be the form that will manifest within the heart, through the holy name. But if you tell you, the thing is we always have to remember that Nam's person. So instead of just doing something and imposing it on him, you say, look, my mind's a monster. And I'm a very visual person. I'm not such an oral person. So I really need to look at something while I hear you. Please forgive me, but this is where I'm at. Right? So it's not really what we do. It's how we do things. And just by, you know, instead of we just personalize it. Instead of, you know, Nam's a process, a bunch of beads, I need a photo, so I just take my photo and I do it.
No, one devotee, great story I heard from. But what you were saying, what sort of resonated with me was that when you're chanting, the chanting has to be a calling. It's not. Meaning it has to have that mood of, just like Prabhupada said, that like you're calling, child is calling for his mother.
Right.
In the absence of that aspect,
I agree.
You're chanting, just the tongue is vibrating.
Right. And
there is like something in the mouth, some sound is coming out.
Right.
But there's no connection happening actually.
Okay.
So in that sense, you were saying that when you're chanting, you should actually be calling to Krishna, be calling to
Radharani. Yeah. So if that helps you, and it's a bona fide thing, if it helps you to have the deity in front of you, also there another way that you can do it is that instead of having a deity, you can have Gurudev, or you can have Prabhupada, because you're needing help. So being aware of their presence more and how you're working under their shelter, you're churning under their shelter, that's also very, very powerful. So in these things, these little details, we have to see what's going to be most effective for us. But it is bona fide, definitely bona fide, for the reasons you've stated, that it gives some sense of sambandha. And that's helpful. But don't just, my point is just don't pull it out of the air and just, you know, play process roller. You know, speak to Nam about it. Speak to Nam about it, that I have this need. Yeah. And, you know, please bear with me. You know, help me. Like that. Because Nam's a person, if you've got this deity form in physical form before you, then you're like, well, I don't have to manifest. Seems happy with the photo. You know, you've got to remember he's not three. In a bent form for no reason. He's quite a tricky fellow. You know, and he has his ways of working. So, always the thing is relationship. Always relationship. You catch my point? Okay, good. Anything else on that? Okay, second one. Interesting. Raganuga Bhakti means preoccupation with Astakaliya Lila. This is another big one. Raganuga Bhakti means this. But let's just have a look Now what we just heard, quoted from Bhaktisiddhanta, again, we're looking at 553, we'll just read it again. Bhaktisiddhanta Jiva Goswami on the, commented on the natural escalating course beginning with chanting the Lord's name. From that realization of root, then guna, eventually lila. Actually, if you're following the process given by the followers, the sincere followers of Jiva Rupa Goswami, we're looking at people like Jiva Goswami and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, then if you're doing it according to the process they're given, you're not going to be touching Astakaliya Lila until Ashakti. You're not ready for it. And what is the value of bringing in Ashakti right at the beginning? You're not familiar with what Krishna looks like, his form, his qualities, you don't know anything about the person, and all of a sudden you're going to get preoccupied with Lila, what the person does. It doesn't make any sense. First, know the person, know his qualities, at least know what he looks like. You know, tune into the right movie. You know, have to know what Krishna looks like. Is it making sense? I'll read you something else. There's an amazing letter that Bhaktisiddhanta wrote quite some time ago, obviously. It's in the second volume of his letters. He wrote a lot of letters to his disciples, and this is quite an amazing letter. The Astashakya Lila described by the Vaishnavas in Vrindavan should no doubt be highly regarded. However, these pastimes cannot be perceived in their true form by one who is still in a contaminated state. Some fortunate individuals become capable of knowing them after chanting for a long time, for it is a part of the identity of the true self. How can you know your service if you don't know the leader and where you fit into it? But it can only be known after one is free of material contaminations. With the awakening of this spiritual identity, one automatically has constant cognition of his spiritual form. Not Krishna's, your own personal spiritual form. Those who say that they can teach or reveal this identity are practicing a kind of deception. It cannot be done. On the other hand, if a devotee receives some inspiration after sincerely chanting for a long time, he should go to Sadguru or advanced devotees and ask for it to be confirmed or purified by them. The spiritual identity has 11 aspects, Ekadasa Bhav. There are many cases of unscrupulous gurus who artificially force-feed these designations on unqualified practitioners. But we cannot call this the mark of spiritual perfection. Those who have achieved identity perfection through siddhi have attained such realization through internal revelation. Guru's not going to tell you. You're going to realize it by following the process he's given. The spiritual master's only involvement in these matters is to help the further advancement of a disciple. As a practitioner progresses towards spiritual perfection, all these things are naturally revealed within the heart that sincerely seeks service. You see, so it's pretty interesting that preoccupation with, you know, and it's so common. You know, I'm practicing Raghunatha Bhakti, that means I spend a lot of time with Elsa Kali Yuna, but, huh? Is there any connection? Yeah.
Do you mean to say that we shouldn't hear? I mean, even if I don't know my spiritual identity.
Right.
I mean, couldn't I listen to, like, Leela and appreciate even if I don't understand?
If you're hearing it from a bona fide source, no problem. If it's not a preoccupation and that's all you're hearing is about, no problem. Otherwise, why did Krishna Prabhupada give us Krishna book? But to be preoccupied with it and thinking that you can enter into it just by hearing it without, you know, where's it got? You know, where's it got to actually act? Where's it got to actually manifest? going to manifest at a heart level. The spiritual, you know, the Swarup Siddhi we're talking about, it's not like it's going to manifest before you, externally. It's manifested internally within the heart. The Dham will manifest within the heart. The whole thing will manifest within the heart. So, you know, we can talk about things superficially, but what is actually the value of it? You know. Occasionally people may talk about those topics, you know, maybe somebody's appearance day or disappearance day, and they just don't, no problem. Hare Krishna. But we don't make a preoccupation of it. It's like Prabhupada gives the example of you give a small boy knowledge about sex life. What's the value of it? What can you do with it? It has no relevance to him. Yeah? Is that okay? There's a few here that are going to shock you a bit. Okay. Third misconception. Vaidhi Bhakti is about rules. Raganuga Bhakti is about spontaneity. I'll follow Raganuga Bhakti now. I don't need rules and regulations. I don't need parampara. Any sadhu will do. As long as he's talking lila and he's giving blessings. This is where you can laugh about it, but this is happening large scale. Yes. It's Gandavodis. It's happening large scale. In effect, this is what they're doing. I'll read it again. Vaidhi Bhakti is about rules. Raganuga Bhakti is about spontaneity. I'll follow Raganuga Bhakti now. I don't need rules and regulations. I don't need parampara. Any sadhu will do, as long as he's talking lila and giving blessings. It's happening big time. So there's a lot that we could unpack in this statement, but I want to keep it just to one thing I want to focus on, and that is something that we little neophytes have difficulty with, and that is we don't see dynamics between things. We see black and white. We don't see interrelationship. How things are actually factually working. So what I want to explore today is a very interesting article by Bhaktivinoda Thakur on the dynamic between Vidhi and Rag. Very interesting. So this is, we're looking at 563. Very interesting article. Please stop me if there's any questions. The rag exhibited by the soul in the materially conditioned state is a perversion caused by the false bodily identification of the soul. And thus the perverted rag of the soul accepts many material things as its objects. Directing this material rag towards flowers, food, drink, intoxicants, clothing, shelter, or lover, the living entities end up bewildered in a world of illusion. For this reason, the conditioned souls are situated far apart from rag, naturally directed to the Lord. Such bhakti instigated by rag is therefore very rare. It is necessary to consider carefully what is beneficial and what is detrimental in the worship of the Lord. From this consideration arises the vidhi, or the rule. So you see that we at the moment, we have rag for everything but Krishna. We are attached to everything but Krishna. So to bring that round, to bring that attraction around and for us to become Seva Mukhe, to face Krishna instead of Bhakti Mukhe, for us to actually make that turn, we need some guidance. We can't do it blindly. Oh, today I'll try this, tomorrow I'll try that. Oh, what did you try yesterday? Maybe I'll try what you tried. You know, what's the value of that? You have to be a little bit real. Let's see what those who know, those who are familiar with the path, what they have to say. Vinny monitors the state of Raj. So at the moment, the Raj that we are having, it's got nothing to do with Krishna. So we have to monitor it. We have to transform it. We have to redirect it. So Vidhi is not an opposing party to Raj. Vidhi may be called the ritual, Raj may be called spontaneous attachment. Though they are different conceptions, in the pure state they are one. Vidhi in its pure state is an assistant to Raj. Pure Raj follows the Vidhi. Naturally, that's an important point to catch. If the Raj is pure, just because of sambandha, just because of connection with yesterday, you'll be following all the rules. You're not going to be even thinking about what to do. Yesterday's going to be directing from the heart. It's a spontaneous. You're just going to be walking through this world as servant of yesterday. He's going to be directing you. You're happy to be his puppet. Happy to be his puppet. It's a relationship of love. So we can understand that the pure Raj follows the Vidhi, which are the will of the Lord. Sometimes we just think rules, rules. But we should remember that the rules represent the will of the Acharyas, the will of Krishna. They're not just rules. They represent the will of Krishna. There's a rhyme and reason behind them. For the Lord, Vidhi predominates, and for the Jivas, Raga predominates. The opposition of Raga and Vidhi that is seen in the material world is because of an unhealthy condition of Raga. When Raga recuperates, Vidhi, having fulfilled its function, retreats. Isn't that beautiful? When Vidhi's done her work, when Vidhi Devi has done her work, the heart is in a healthy state. It's naturally attracted to Krishna. I've done my work. Time to go home. Yeah? It's so beautiful.
What does this mean for the Lord? He predominates?
Yeah. Because when the Jivas, it's like a father and a child. The child has so many desires, so many attachments. The father's looking at his long-term best interests. So he's preoccupied with the rule that's going to affect the child's best interests. But the kid's just attracted. He's just got his attachments, and that's what he's dealing with. Does that make sense? Yeah. So like, you know, Krishna, why is he giving all these rules and regulations? Not because he's a sadist and wants to see him suffer. Yeah. No father does that. No decent father does that. He has a reason. He has the best interest of the child at heart. That's why he's giving the rules. The Krishna doesn't, he's not different from that. Is that clear now?
Yes.
Okay. When Raj recuperates, Vidhi, having for Buddha's function, retreats. Therefore, in the healthy state, Raj predominates for the Jiva. As much as Raj for material things leads to degradation, so Raga for the Lord becomes the highest condition of existence. At the moment, the mind is running after so many things. Just imagine that that mind is all of a sudden running after Krishna. What a change of mindset, change of reality. Yeah? But how's it going to be affected? It's going to be affected by appropriately understanding and following Vidhi. Not just some dry, ritualistic thing. The relation of Raga with Vidhi is like the relation of the body to medicine. Raga has many functions. But the function of Vidhi is to protect and nourish Raga. See, this is the role of Vidhi. It's to protect and nourish your Raga attachment. When Raga is thoroughly nourished, It does not depend on Vidhi any longer. Pure Raya, for the Lord takes shelter only of the pure soul, a soul who has been liberated from material contamination. That means at least Nista. That's a level of liberation. That pure Raya is called Ragatmika Bhakti. Only pure souls who participate in the Lord's pastimes are qualified for Ragatmika Bhakti. None except the inhabitants of Braj are qualified. Okay, we're talking Ragatmika. So then it's going to be a long, it's way beyond Nista, it's beyond this material sky. Okay, so when conditioned souls, by hearing the descriptions in the scriptures, develop a desire to follow in the footsteps of the inhabitants of Braj, who offer Ragatmika Bhakti to Krishna, the bhakti that results is called Raganuga. The inspiration for this level of bhakti is greed, for its object, not the vidhi. The vidhi, by various means, attempts to stimulate the nature of the soul. This is another role of vidhi, which is important to realize. It's, the vidhi is meant to stimulate the actual heart of the soul. However, when spiritual greed becomes the impetus for following the vidhi, the devotional practice is no longer called Vaidhi Bhakti, but rather Nuga Bhakti. That person who develops lobe, sacred greed, to attain the emotional state in which the Ragatmika devotees serve Krishna, is qualified for Raganuga Bhakti. Raganuga Bhakti includes all the same angas as Vaidhi Bhakti, but the devotee of Raganuga Bhakti performs those activities with a spontaneous mood, rather than by following the guidelines of vidhi. So the practice will look pretty much the same, but the motivation and the mood is going to be very different. The conditioned soul living in the world must necessarily carry out physical, mental, and social activities to maintain his body. The vidhi mentioned in the discussion of Vaidhi Bhakti, which serves to keep the devotee on the path of bhakti and prevent him from becoming materially contaminated, must also be followed by the practitioners of Raganuga Bhakti. So as long as we're living in this world, the rules are there for us. The practice of Raganuga is eternal. So internal. So what external vidhi should the person follow? If devotees do not accept all the necessary rules of Vaidhi Bhakti that serve to make them fit for practicing internally, they will finish their life untimely or revert to material life and reduce their propensity for rag. Now this is a pretty amazing, it's a very deep subject matter, and I don't want to go into it a lot today, but we should at least touch on it. And that is that we, in the conditioned state, the senses moving out. Mind and senses, parag, they're outward bound. Their preoccupation is finding sense objects to control and enjoy. So preoccupation, built into the system. Now the devotional process, even Patanjali process, is parag, you're bringing it back in. But the devotional path is not artificial in the sense that you're negating all that. Rather, you're dovetailing it. You're seeing it in relation to Krishna. Now, to do that successfully while you're practicing Raganuga Bhakti, you have to keep all the vidhi in place. Otherwise, at any time, the mind and senses are going to say, hey, this, because it's set up like that. The computer is programmed like that. So then the role of vidhi is to keep that under proper surveillance, proper protection, so you can get on with the real life. Does that make sense? Yes, no?
Yeah.
Okay, good. If the manner of cultivating bhakti is not accepted in full, internal practice cannot be maintained or grown. I have to accept the whole thing. At the moment, everything is piecemeal. Bit of this, bit of that, put it all together in my own kitchen, it tastes good. So interest in Raganuga may grow, the youngest of bhakti, such as hearing and chanting, should not be given up. Krishnadas Kaviraj tells us that if we give up on hearing and chanting, even from bhava we can fall. Even from bhava we can fall. So we have to be very, very careful. Sadhana bhaktas who develop a greed for emotions similar to those of a particular inhabitant of Braj should eternally fix themselves as servants of that person and with complete dedication to him or her, internally perform service in a suitably materially conceived spiritual body. That doesn't mean that you are materially conceiving it in your conditioned state, or you've been given it and received it in conditioned state, but rather it is manifested in the spiritual mind, and you're working with that. They should practice externally all the angas of Vaidhi Bhakti that are agreeable to their particular cultivation as long as they have not reached the beginning stages of prem. Thus they should follow the vidhi that is favorable to their mood. Furthermore, they should serve Krishna and his devotees with faith. They should regularly discuss about Krishna and his devotees. And they should live in Braj or a place where the Lord performs his pastimes. If they cannot do so physically, then they should do so mentally. The causes of Vaidhi Bhakti are the scriptures and the vidhi therein that guides the performance of bhakti. In contrast, the causes of Raganuga Bhakti are Krishna and his devotees. As Vaidhi Bhakti is a reverential form of Prema Bhakti, it is sometimes called Mayada Marg, the path of respect. As Raganuga Bhakti nourishes Prema Bhakti, it is sometimes called the Pusti Marg, the path of nourishment. There's also something interesting that Vishwanath Thakurvati Thakur says on 567, just to help us get this dynamic between Vidhi and Rag, so that we stop seeing black and white and it's one or the other. We see the relationship. It's a very amazing sentence. It's actually the last para. Actually, when one follows Vidhi Marg prompted by greed, that is called Raganuga Bhakti. And when one follows Vidhi Marg and is prompted by the orders from the revealed scriptures, that is called Vidhi Bhakti. When one worships Krishna without following the rules given by the scriptures, then as Narada Pancharatra proves, it is considered to be simply a cause of disturbance. So it's making it very, very clear that whether you're practicing Raga Marg or Vidhi Marg, there's going to be rules. Raganuga Bhakti is sadhana. It's a level of sadhana. Sadhana means there will be some guidance, there will be some prescription. But what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is pointing out here is the mood will be different. And he also makes a very strong point that if you're not following Vidhi, you're a disturbance. And we see a lot of it. It's a lot of disturbance. To the mission of Mahaprabhu, the mission of the Acharyas. Because there's so much propagation of stuff that's got nothing to do with, you know, their mission, their teachings. Any questions on that before we move on?
It's all about consciousness and all, like we discussed yesterday.
Right.
And this first two lines are so wonderful, that one follows Vidhi Marg, prompted by the greed.
Right.
There, the difference is they both follow.
Right.
But the consciousness is different.
Right.
One has developed that little, maybe little seed of a greed.
Right.
And one is following the rules and regulations, and
right,
that is prompting him.
Right. And the other point to remember is that from following those rules and proper mood, the greed will awaken.
Well, then it will awaken, rather.
Yeah. It will awaken. Because the whole, as we were reading earlier from Bhaktivinoda Thakur, it's meant, the vidhi is meant as a stimulus. It's a stimulus. Stimulate our natural attraction for Krishna. Yeah? Any questions on that before we move on? Okay. The next misconception we're going to look at, I'll read it, then I'll make a comment. I've decided to go to Bhashan or Radha Kund to become a Babaji. This is a ridiculous statement. If you look at this from the perspective of the Goswamis of Mahaprabhu, this is a nonsensical statement. But it has been, it's so prevalent now that it's part of mainstream consciousness, almost, amongst devotees. So it's quite a normal thing for me to go to Radhakunda Bhashan and become a Babaji. Isn't it? That's why, you know, you like drop everything, including the 3-month-old kid, and go to Bhashan and become a Babaji. But, you know, the reality, you know, this is why things, what happens after the Acharya leaves, and the connection with the parampara seems to be broken. But what we have to remember is that not only does that appear to be lost, but there are many hybrids on the scene. And it's because of the hybrids that it appears to be lost. You can't see it because of all the hybrids. So when you're looking at this field, this is a big one. A number of devotees, you know, they just drop ISKCON and just go and become Babaji at Radhakund, Babaji with their Balavas, but you know, like this, like that. And you know, that's perfectly fine. That's logical next step, isn't it? Hang on. But let's have a look. We're going to have a look at Bhaktivinoda Thakur again. 5, 6, 8. Again, we're looking at dynamic. The dynamic between Baba and Babaji. Big change of consciousness is required here to really get in tune with what we're looking at. There is a sect of Babajis who call themselves Viraktas, detached. They dress like Babajis and think themselves renounced. But it is a mistake to think that simply accepting a name will produce virakti, detachment. One should not accept the dress of a Babaji if virakti has not appeared with oneself as a corollary of Baba. It's a Paramahamsa stage. It's superior to sannyas, Babaji. So when, from the practice of your bhakti, this level of renunciation has come as a result of your bhava, then you can accept Babaji Vish. Then you're actually qualified for Babaji Vish, otherwise not. Those who find this world and family life Let's go back a bit. One should not accept the dress of a Babaji if Viraki is not a people of oneself as a corollary of bhava. Babaji means to have developed virakti through bhava, whereby all aspects of material life have become distasteful. Those who find this world and family life unfavorable for cultivating devotion should restrict their needs, wear simple cloth, and partake only prasad obtained by begging. This lifestyle will gradually become natural for them. When it is determined by the guru that their character has actually transformed in accordance with scriptural standards and they are deemed qualified, that is real attainment of Babaji status. Number of things are being, points are being made here, determined by guru, transformation of character. We're looking at the internals, not just the externals. The character, transformation of character, according to scriptural standards, and then they're deemed qualified, then that's real attainment of Babaji status. The present custom of awarding Babaji status to unqualified people is extremely dangerous. What to speak of developing Baba without being steady in Vaidhi Bhakti, many people flightingly or out of temporary renunciation adopt Baba Vishvesh for the purpose of making a living. Temporary renunciation refers to distaste for the world that arises from disagreement between man and wife, other forms of suffering in family life, inability to get married, association with prostitutes, influence of intoxicants, and so on. With this immature sense of renunciation, people boldly approach a Babaji or Goswami and offer some donation in exchange for a coconut cloth. But soon the renunciation wears off and the man or woman, controlled by the senses, falls into a illegitimate family life or secretly satisfies senses illicitly. They attain no spiritual advantage from this. The Vaishnava community will not derive benefit until this type of Babaji life is completely eradicated. False renunciation is a great offense to devotional life. Among persons who identify themselves as Vaishnava renunciates, those who have actually attained detachment through bhakti are very rare. They should be given full respect. Unauthorized renunciates are divided into four classes: monkey renunciates, cheating renunciates, unsteady renunciates, and imitative renunciates. Monkey renunciates don the cloth of renunciates, but not being factually renounced, they travel around with uncontrolled senses, committing sinful acts. Cheating renunciates adopt Babaji vests during festivals or for receiving donations from householders to enjoy food, tobacco, or ganja, or to get their funeral rites performed from Vaishnavas when they pass away. Unsteady renunciates accept Babaji vests due to momentary feelings of renunciation arising from suffering, poverty, sickness, failure of marriage, or quarrel. The renunciation does not endure. Very quickly they become false renunciates. Imitative renunciates are those who, due to addiction to intoxicants or failure in married life, make a show of bhakti while intoxicated, or learn how to act as a devotee by showing false symptoms, or try to imitate the stage of bhava by material emotions. All of these categories of so-called renunciates are low, sinful, and unbeneficial for the world. Rampant, in holy places in particular, big money business. Renunciation arising from bhakti is the beauty of devotional life. To first renounce and then search out bhakti is unnatural and in most cases disastrous. Renunciation or detachment is a special ornament of the person who has attained bhava. It is not an anga of bhakti, but a symptom of bhakti. I'm going to read this again because it's so important. Renunciation arising from bhakti is a beauty of devotional life. To first renounce and then search out bhakti is unnatural and in most places, disastrous. Renunciation or detachment is a special ornament of the person who has attained bhava. It's not an anga of bhakti, but a symptom of bhakti. So this is a very good guide for those of us who are presently grihasthas. When are we qualified to renounce at ashram? Successfully. Renounce at ashram. Here's the answer. It's not a cheap thing. Any questions on that? Yeah.
How can a person who has from previous lives these samskaras, very deep samskaras of renunciation?
Yeah, but we're not talking renunciation, we're talking bhava. You see, renunciation is one thing. We know the thing. Can we leave that for a minute?
Sure.
And that'll be the next one we look at.
Okay.
And then we'll look at it. Because samskara for renunciation has got to, you know, it's got nothing to do with bhakti. It can actually stand in the way of development of bhakti. So this is why we have to be so careful about how we proceed. And that's why it's so important to understand Rupa Goswami's elaboration on Yukta Vairagya. This is actually the holistic path. This is the path that the bhaktas walk. You find with renunciation that you'll find more with the yogis and the jnanis. But the bhaktas who are followers, following Mahaprabhu, renunciation may be externally visible, but you find that the heart is very soft. Why? Because the heart is strongly bonded with Krishna. A heart that's strongly bonded with Krishna not only has love for Krishna, but compassion for the enemies. So where's the sense of renunciation of all that? Where's the sense of renunciation of all that? Yeah. Any other questions or thoughts?
But there is sometimes like we talk about the vanprastha, like at a particular age, like one should take it. Isn't it that it's like a anga, then you're treating it as an anga, it's not a symptom. Like you talk, you spoke about the symptom and
right.
how do we understand that? Like if one is not ready only.
Yeah. Nothing should be done prematurely or artificially. Whatever we do should be done under guidance. The importance of doing things under guidance is that then, you know, when challenges come up, you've got someone to discuss it with. What do I do now?
So it shouldn't be on the basis of age, like maybe it's...
How can it be on the basis
of... Yeah, so then some people say like that, so that's...
You know, there's a... I see if I can remember it. Chalika Pandit. In the Sutra community, age is respected. In the Vaishya community, money is respected. Kshatriya community, power is respected. Brahminical community, knowledge is respected. And the association of Vaishnavas, bhakti is respected. So we have to see, okay, you know, like, am I even able to properly manage my grihasa ashram right now? It's not that you make a disaster of this ashram and move on. I mean, I know that's the usual scene in material existence. You make a disaster but move on. But that's not quite Prabhupada's program. Prabhupada's program is you perfect it. Having perfected it, you move on. Because by perfecting it, you have realizations, which will allow you to understand that the family is a bit bigger than three or four people. There's a whole world out there that's Prabhupada's family. You want to serve a bigger world. You have to be practical, what you're ready for. You can't do these things artificially. Certainly can't be, you know, when you're talking based on age, then that's a student mentality. But looking, you know, everything in terms of age, you do this at this age, you do that at that age. What sense does it make? That's Vyarika. And we're not talking externals. We're talking the heart has to be ready. You have to be ready for it.
Just because I was reading repeatedly in Srimad Bhagavatam.
Right.
Many places should have taught us that there are yoga 60.
Yeah.
And should retire. Right. My understanding, I'm just because Prabhupada was mentioning Vanaprastha.
Right.
My understanding only of Vanaprastha was that the husband and wife stay in the same house, but they now reduce their, gradually they reduce their engagement,
right,
both with each other in terms of attachment, physical attachment,
right,
and also in terms of meddling in the family affairs,
right,
which they start giving up to the son, and not getting too much entangled again and again.
Right.
But, and this continues for another 25 years, in the sense that not leaving the house, and completely renouncing and going, but now practicing gradual pulling out of the scene.
Makes a lot more sense.
Yeah.
Makes a lot more sense.
But Varnashram also, while it is based on age only, you know, in a lot of our, like Prabhu is saying, that we hear so many times in the temples also, and sometimes the same devotees, they also prod us. But like I said, the idea we hear is this,
you know, the answer.
You know, like, you know, let's be real. Let's be realistic. Varnashram is an eternal thing. It's the background for Gaurlila, it's the background for Brajlila. It's an eternal part of life. But then you have to see, according to the circumstance, what's going to be effective. The essential thing is, what is your adhika? If you have your first child at 36, how are you going to take vanaprastha at 50, responsibly? You've got to be realistic. Kali Yuga is a mix-up. Everything is upside down, isn't it? So we always have, Rupa Nugas are very practical people. Why? Because Rupa Goswami's field is Abhideya, process. So then, you know, we've always got to look at what makes things work. What's practical in this circumstance. This is why Chaitanya Charitamrita is so important. Because in Bhagavatam, Prabhupada's purports deal a lot with Abhideya and working principle, because that is his Rupa Nuga. But you find if you just read the text of Bhagavatam, you're looking mainly at tattva. But in CC, first 12 chapters of Adilila, all the tattva. Then right through all those other volumes, how it works. Let's move on to the next misconception, because I think this will clear what we're talking about now. A very interesting point from Bhaktivedanta Thakura. Okay, the next one. Renunciation is a sign of advanced Krishna consciousness. I should be a renunciate. It's another big misconception. We're going to hear from Bhagavan Otakko. Have a look at your last handout. It's entitled, Is Renunciation a Sign of Advancement in Krishna Consciousness? This one is really cuts through the middle of the mental pendulum. This one is talking bhakti, not aversion, attraction. It's from Bhakti Loka. For a devotee to remain a householder or to become a renunciate is the same thing. How's that for an opening sentence?
Solid.
Solid. For a devotee to remain a householder or to become a renunciate is the same thing. Srila Ramananda Roy, Sri Pundarik Vijayaniti, Sri Shivas Pandit, Sri Shivananda Sen, Sri Satyaraj Khan, and Sri Advaita Prabhu were all grihasthas and have shown us the way of faultless living. The difference between a householder... Now, one thing I want to say before we move on is a very important point that Bhaktivinoda Thakur makes, is that there are two kinds of Mahajans. There's the ancient and the modern. He explains that the Mahajans that are mentioned in Bhagavatam are the ancient. They should be respected. The modern Mahajans are Mahaprabhu and his followers. Mahaprabhu and his followers have come specifically in this age to teach us. So our preference should be to follow in the footsteps of the modern Mahajans. It makes more sense. I mean, you go and wrap yourself in bark, nothing but bark, you know, and try and live on a few berries, people are going to lock you up. It's a different world now. I don't understand all these things. I don't think you're crazy then. What do I know about Bhagavatam? I've got a clue about Bhagavatam. Okay, let's start from the beginning. For a devotee to remain a householder to become a renunciate is the same thing. Srila Ramananda Roy, Sri Pundarik Vijayaniti, Sri Shivas Pandit, Sri Shivananda Sen, Sri Satyaraj Khan, and Sri Advaita Prabhu were all grihasthas, shown us a way of faultless living. The difference between a householder and a renunciate is due to their different means of livelihood. We make so many big time differences, but this is the actual difference. If the home is favorable for a devotee's devotional service, then he should not leave. It is his duty to remain in Grihasa with attachment. But when the home becomes unfavorable for his service, then he becomes eligible to leave home. At that time, the attachment he develops for his house through his devotional service is accepted. For this reason, Srivast Pandit did not leave home. For this reason, Srup Damodar took sannyas. All genuine devotees have remained either at home or in the forest due to this consideration. Can you see it's not static? It's a dynamic process. What? It's based on principles of surrender. What is favorable, what's unfavorable for my Krishna consciousness. Not some artificial, you know, black and white, let's do this, let's do that. Where's the reality in that? Where's the sanity in that? Human beings should worship Krishna by considering their natural qualities and accepting the livelihoods of the previous and later Mahajans. Pure devotional service is proportionally enhanced by following a proper occupation. Otherwise, it's never achieved. You have to have some steadiness in your life. If it's a steadiness of occupation, then everything else can move very smoothly. You don't have to give too much importance to who am I, what am I supposed to do, it's sorted out. It's going on. It's like wearing white. You don't have to think every day which sari am I going to wear. Just wear the same sari. There's a lot of room in the mind for other thoughts. I can imagine the jollies and the sari and the petticoat shouldn't show and this and you know, thank God. So much time wasted. So in the same way, if your occupation is clear, huh, who you are, what your ashram is, what your vana is, that's all clear, then you can get on with the real life. The real life is developing your Krishna consciousness. You've got a steady base. You don't have to think every day, what am I going to do today? It's steady. You don't have to give it too much thought. When something's running on automatic, you don't have to give it too much thought. You just have to check on it occasionally. You hiccups, you fix it. But that's it. Right? And then you're free to concentrate on the real thing. You should become Krishna conscious. Devotees should constantly take shelter of the holy name while passing their lives without duplicity or sin. There is no greater religious principle than this. In Kali Yuga, chanting the holy name is the essential religious principle. No other religious practice can help one cross the material ocean of omniscience. Now, in our conditioned state, we have a habit of taking detail and turning it into substance. Enunciation. Such a big thing. No, it's not really a big thing. Enunciation, attachment, two sides of the same coin. The real thing is Harinam, the real thing is Bhakti. So put everything in proper perspective and get on with life. There's a very beautiful purport by Prabhupada too. In the box, we'll have a read of that. That's his purport to Anarthan Dastakur song, Savarana Gora Mahima. Narottam Das Thakur concludes the song by saying, Grihe Bane Bane Te Thake He Ha Goranga Bole Dake. It is not necessary that one become a mendicant or give up his family life and society. One can remain wherever he finds it suitable, whether as a householder, as a brahmachari, as a vanaprastha, or as a sannyasi. Vanaprasthas and sannyasis are supposed to live outside the city. Vanati means forest. Formerly, those who are in spiritual consciousness used to live in the forest to become free of the turmoil of city life. But that is not possible now. In this age, no one can go into the forest. That requires practice, and no one is practiced to that line. Therefore, generally, one is recommended to live with his friends, wife, and children. That doesn't matter. But he must take to the process of Krishna consciousness as introduced by Lord Chaitanya. It is not difficult. The real thing is that one has to accept the movement of Lord Chaitanya, chanting, dancing, and eating Krishna prasad. Even if one is in family life, there is no difficulty. You can just sit down, chant Hare Krishna, dance nicely, and take Krishna prasad. Everyone can do this. Those who renounce this world, sannyasis, can also do it. There's no difficulty. Therefore, Narottam Das Thakur says that it doesn't matter whether one is a brahmachari, grihastha, or sannyasi. He says, if you have taken to these principles of life, I desire your company because you are a devotee of Lord Chaitanya. So beautiful. Any questions on that? Before I move on to the last one.
Can you say that Bhagavatam says in the first category, do bhakti properly, the renunciation of jnana comes automatically.
Right.
So that if you're following the rules and regulations given by the acharya, so those things will automatically happen in your heart. And once the time comes, then only it is like you said, an internal process has to work first.
Yeah.
Then benchmarking them with some other external.
Yeah. But the thing is that, there are many ways you can do things. The essential thing is you do it favorably. So doing something favorably hasn't got to do so much, I mean it has something to do with the rules and regulations, you follow them as they are, but more important is the mood in which you're doing it, consciousness in which you're doing it, whether you have a heart for it, why you're doing it, all those things. That's what's actually going to be the going to give rise to realization. You can program a computer to play the same bhajans over and over again. Does it get any realization from this? It's following the process. It's Niranta Bhajan. It's not going to work. Heart has to be involved. Has to be done favorably.
And that what we discussed yesterday was very nice. The yukta viragya, that we must understand. For devotees, it is a yukta viragya principle.
Yeah.
As you said, it is a goal of principle.
Yes.
That is more important for us there than
anything else.
Yeah.
All of Golok runs on that principle. You look at the daily lives of the gopis and gopis. None of them are sitting down and meditating on the spiritual form. None of them are rejecting or renouncing what they have. They're using everything in Krishna's service. Why? Because they love him. They want to please him. Yeah?
But did you just say, or say with Bhagavatam that if you follow the process of bhakti, then renunciation will automatically happen?
Yeah, but we have to understand what a renunciation means.
Yeah, so my note was that if you're following devotional service nicely, then renunciation may not be needed at all. I mean, it's just...
Well, the thing is, you have to understand what renunciation is. Mm. What knowledge of renunciation is. Remember the quote we read yesterday? You read it again. Very, very powerful statement by Prabhupada. It's from his Krishna book. Mm-hmm. We don't have much time now, but you read that quote again. Very, very powerful quote.
Mind is fixed in Krishna.
That's knowledge, that's pure knowledge. Okay, let's move on. Now, we've been dealing with a number of misconceptions today. And we're hearing all of this, our response may be to hearing all of this. Minhustanastakalya lila is for sahajas. Mahabhu's teaching is chitabhapanamajan. I'm just going to deal with that. It's another misconception. Do you want me to repeat that? Okay. We've heard about all these misconceptions on that in relation to Radman. So our response, natural response to that may be, well, obviously, interest in Astakaliya Lila is for sahajas. And Mahaprabhu's program is Chetadapanamajanam, so I should just stick with that. I'll be safe. It's also a misconception. You see how when we're on the mental platform, we just swing between things. It's not that. Okay, must be that. Okay, it's not that, must be that. On.
Like a mountain.
Yeah. Like a machine. Swinging. Okay. Let's read. 569. This is by Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, from a lecture he gave at Radhakuna in 1932. A prayojan, anathana vritti or akatra vritti. Interesting. All these days we have not spoken to everyone about Leela. The reason is that this is our greatly confidential asset, our only objective. We should not mistakenly consider anathana vritti as prayojan. It's a stage. Anathana vritti is a stage, a necessary stage. For one thus surmising can never enter into artha pravritti. Therefore I will begin speaking about Astakaliya Leela. I know that even now you are not ready to hear it, yet we should know that such a transcendental ideal exists within the realm of bhajan. This is why anathana vritti is essential. After that comes artha pravritti, namely that in the supramundane realm there is service to the divine pastime couple. Without knowing this, all our efforts may end in voidism. So if you're just preoccupied with the anathana vritti, take it out, clean it out, take it out, what are you left with?
Void.
Left with void. So that can't be the preoccupation. The preoccupation, it's important that we take care of it, but the preoccupation is to develop our attachment for Krishna. That's the actual important thing, is to develop our attachment for Krishna. And to realize that why are we involved in anathana vritti? So that we can achieve the real artha, the real treasure. Service of the Lord is really what I shun. This is why. You're always understanding why we're doing things. Yeah? Makes life a lot easier. Let those who have chanted Harinam 15 or 20 years hear such matters. Beginners need not hear these topics, for they would misunderstand. These subjects are for Seva Mukha listeners, not for all. This is a very important statement. What is the big difference between someone who's chanting and someone who's not, between a beginner and someone who's a little advanced? Are you following Seva Mukha? He's saying these subjects are for Seva Mukha listeners. Why? Because then you have the adhikar. You've proven your chastity to Krishna in the form of only honoring prasad. And using the tongue for Naam, not Sadaninda, Prajapa, or the other rubbish under the sun, then you're qualified to hearing this. You have the strength, actually, to hear it. I will not speak here and there to anyone and everyone about my bhajan. Disregard of this instruction of our previous acharyas will cause a permanent fall from the realm of bhajan. This is actually from Narottam Das Thakur's Premabhakti Chandrika. That we, in terms of our what we're doing with our bhajan, that is between us and those who are taking shelter. That's something we discuss with Guru. It's not that we go, you know, running around here, they're everywhere discussing what we're doing in our bhajan. There's two reasons that Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur gives why we don't do that. One is that we become proud. Look what I'm doing. Becomes a preoccupation to tell people what we're doing rather than do it. And the other thing is that it may create envy. Who she thinks she is. What does he think he knows? Like that. So the whole point is under, you know, a little bit undercurrent. Not rah 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 up front. A little bit back seat, so to say. Yeah? Do not think that Astakaliya Leela Smaran is the property of the Prakriti Sahajas. It is actually our affair. It has to be retrieved from the hands of those cheetahs. Our Guru Maharaj heard these things from Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur and in turn revealed to us various esoteric matters. We have heard the last instructions from our Sri Gurudev. Living in Radhakund will be pleasant if you could deliver it from the hands of 11 ungodly men. Perhaps by now, 11 has increased to 108. He's talking about the Panchayat, the Babaji's that wrote Radhakund. So obviously it is our field, but the point of what we're sitting talking about this morning is that qualification for the field, having clarity about what you're involved in, and following the process given by our particular acharyas for that, achieving that wonderful goal. Not here, bit here, bit there. Makes it pitchy. Not often. Hare Krishna.